From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations featuring scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center. Welcome to Soundings, the life and work of the American painter Marsden Hartley. That's the topic on Soundings this week, the first of two discussions about art and society. My guests on this edition of Soundings are one scholar and a recent visitor at the National Humanities Center, Townsend Luddington of the University of North Carolina, and Thomas Gitkins of the Free University of Berlin. During a recent fellowship year at the center, Townsend Luddington worked on a forthcoming biography of Marsden Hartley. Marsden Hartley was among the first American modernist painters, although less well-known than his contemporaries Georgia O'Keeffe and John Marin. In personal terms, Hartley was a shy and lonely individual, a self-educated New Englander. Like other American artists and writers of the late 19th and early 20th centuries, Hartley searched for native subjects, form, and atmosphere, and in so doing reflects the growth of American art to be free from the shadow of Europe. Townsend Luddington from the University of North Carolina, Thomas Gitkins from the Free University of Berlin. Our topic is Marsden Hartley, who's an American painter. Townie Luddington is at the Humanities Center writing a biography about this man. Townie, who was he? Why is he important? Why does he deserve to have a biography written about him?
Let me start with just a few biographical facts about him, Wayne. He was born in Lewiston, Maine on January 4, 1877, and he died in a tiny village at the coast of Maine, north of Ellsworth, that is located around Bar Harbor and Mount Desert, just north of there. He died on September 4th, 1943. The great importance of Hartley, and the reason I became interested in him, was that he was one of the major early American modernists. He was one of Stieglitz's important, one of the important figures in Stieglitz's entourage, the others, of course, being probably the even better known, certainly better known, Georgia O'Keeffe and John Marin, and then Hartley, Arthur Dove, Charles Demuth. I became interested in him because my own interest in a very general way in American art, and another interest in American culture of the period in which Hartley painted, which is roughly the beginning of the, well, from the beginning of the 20th century and until his death. Mm-hmm. I find that a very fascinating period when a great many changes were going on. And it occurred to me as I began to find out about Hartley and also to look at his painting that what his life was and what he was painting represented some very important aspects of American culture. I had also thought when I first got involved with him that I could use him as a kind of paradigm for American culture more broadly. Uh-huh. I don't think, except for the period of the 1930s, and really the 30s, yeah, when he came back from Europe, that this is going to work, because he was a very private, introverted person, apolitical. Mm-hmm. And whereas, for example, when I was writing on John Dos Passos's major interests were in politics and culture. Uh-huh. Hartley's are rather more private interests. He was a mystic. He was very interested in the artistic aspects of art, as one would hope he would be. And that makes him a rather different person. Fascinating person, because he's extremely articulate about his work. He knew what he was doing, and I would say, perhaps only in my ignorance, but I would at least say that he could speak about it and write about it rather better than most other artists that I've seen.
Let me draw Thomas Gitkins into the conversation. We can jump forward a little bit here in the life of Marsden Hartley. Tell me about his life as an artist in Europe.
Let me tell you how I got involved with Hartley. I found in the German archive a bundle of letters by Hartley addressed to Franz Marc, the German painter Franz Marc, living in Munich around 1910. And it turned out that Franz Marc and Hartley knew each other and corresponded for a certain while during the stay of Hartley in Europe from 1912 until 1915. I have become interested in those letters. Those letters are very revealing for the period he lived in Europe. And what my special interest was that how did an American painter make his way in Europe? Normally, American painters coming from the circle of Stieglitz went only to Paris, and they lived in Paris for a while, studied Picasso, were in the salon of Gertrude Stein, but Hartley only stayed for a certain while in Paris, and then he went on to Munich. He came in contact with the painters there, with Kandinsky, Franz Marc, and he ended in Berlin, where he stayed for over 2 years, even during the First World War. So he went around in Europe, and my interest was what did mean Europe at this time for an American painter. And the result of my research is that Europe was not a unity. Europe meant three different capitals with three different atmospheres of
Paris modernism. Would be one, and
Paris. He was there. He was interested in Picasso, but he thought Paris was not exactly the place where he should stay. And he thought the art in Paris much too intellectual, much too oversophisticated. And he then found out that German painting, and above all the circle around Franz Marc and Kandinsky and the Blue Rider, was much more in his terms, and he found there this kind of mystical background he had in the United States. So if you want his stay or his trip in Europe from Paris, Munich to Berlin was a development, finding his own sources and coming mm-hmm. back to his own background mm-hmm. and his own past in the United States.
Townsend Ludington, let me draw you into the conversation. We're talking about Marsden Hartley, the American painter who died in 1943. Can you characterize the paintings, that is, by way of what? The themes, the topics, the ideas that Hartley was interested in?
Yes, he was very much primarily a landscape painter. Mm-hmm. And the landscapes that he did through all his career, although, and this would be true of still lifes too, which he did a great many of, and was very respectful of Cézanne, for instance, mm-hmm. and did a lot of Cézanne-esque still lifes. Always, Hartley was trying to express the kinds of sort of mystical feeling, let's say, that you get in an American writer like Ralph Waldo Emerson or Henry David Thoreau or Walt Whitman, the kinds of ideas, transcendental ideas and mystical ideas of that and other sorts, mm-hmm. are what Hartley is trying to render in his painting.
Can we call him an original? I'd like to hear from Thomas Gitkins about that too.
The derivative is strong in him, but what is interesting, what you see him doing is borrowing and then rapidly moving until the last decade of his life from one style to another, mm-hmm. being influenced by, first an Italian painter of landscapes called named Giovanni Segantini, and then he moves from Segantini to Albert Pinkham Ryder, and from Ryder to Cézanne, Picasso, Matisse, the American painter Max Weber, and others, but he draws from those the qualities that he recognizes to be very distinctive in those paintings, mm-hmm. and making them original, uses them, but also develops in his own way.
Mm-hmm. How about this, Thomas Gitkins?
Yes. Let me say one thing more. I think Hartley was basically an insecure personality.
He
was
definitely
all the time looking for new experiences and changing his style. But it's true, he was interested in Cézanne. He was first interested in American Impressionists. Then he was interested in French Impressionists. Then he depended on Pinkham Ryder, which was of a very important influence to him. And then he became once more interested in another group of paintings, and those were the French Modernists, Cézanne, Matisse. He saw the first paintings with Stieglitz in the gallery of Stieglitz, and he changed his style once more, and that created in him the interest to go to Europe.
Now, is this part of what we might call the argument of your biography of Marston Hartley? And well, and the larger question being, what are you saying about this man that may not necessarily have been said before? For example, a special case that you make?
I'm not trying to make a case for him. He doesn't need defense. I mean, just in materialistic terms, Hartley is a very, now after his death, Hartley is a very successful painter. About a year or two ago, one of his famous German officer, as they're referred to, German officer paintings was sold for almost $1 million. So Hartley's in the big time. He doesn't need a case made for him. I am simply writing about him because, in fact, the closest thing to a biography that has ever been done about him is a very fine but very limited in its length, if nothing else, biography about, which is part of his of a catalog that was done for a major exhibition at the Whitney Gallery.
All right, now let me use that as a starting point for a pretty big question that we might put on the table. Towny Luddington and Thomas Gitkins, our topic is Marston Hartley, the American painter, dies a man who died in 1943. How do you figure out the difference between the life and the work? Townsend, or let me begin with you, Towny Luddington.
One answer, of course, would be is after my book is published, when it is. I won't say if, because I think it will be. The art historians will no doubt say I left out something, because I will not be doing the kind of thing that a great many of them would like to have seen me do.
That is to say, more pictures.
Discussion, probably in more technical, critical terms of the paintings.
Right.
I will certainly discuss the paintings. You have to come to terms with them, but I'm interested in them as they tend to reflect the man. But I think in Hartley's case, as in everybody's case, I mean, I think this is true in literature too, that, you know, the person, the biography is deeply involved. I mean, I believe this. I know that there are critics of various persuasions who don't believe this. Mm-hmm. I happen to believe there's a great deal of relationship between a person's life and his or her work.
All right, Thomas Gitkins, how about this? You approach him from the standpoint of the art historian.
Well, one reason of this inspiring friendship and collaboration with Tony, the fact that we are looking from different sides to the same painter, and
they're not necessarily exclusive.
No, they're not at all exclusive. They're completely compatible, as we would say in computer language. And I think it's you must know that we have your question: life of Hartley, work of Hartley. Mm-hmm. We have many documents about Hartley. We have an enormous amount of letters, other people writing about him, his own writings, and it's basically too much what we have. We have so much to read and to consider about this man that it's really very difficult to come through. But coming back to your question, those letters prove that there is a very intense link between his life and his art. Mm-hmm. He's all the time speaking, writing to friends, other artists, about his thinking, about his work, trying to explain what he's doing.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You're listening to a discussion about the life and work of the American painter Marston Hartley, who lived from 1877 till 1943. My guests are Townsend Luddington, a professor of English at the University of North Carolina, and Thomas Gitkins, an art historian at the Free University of Berlin. During a recent fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, Townsend Luddington worked on a forthcoming biography of Marston Hartley. Here is Thomas Gitkins.
I would raise this question to Tony. Is he not also a good example of an American painter who represents in a certain way in the early 20th century a personality of American culture changing European culture into a self-confidence of being an American? So I think I rather see all this Stieglitz group, and I think there are American writers in the same way to be looked at in at this way. I see the whole Stieglitz group as the first group of American modernist painters who become self-confident of what they are doing as Americans and not only being dependent on what is going on in Europe. And this leads me to the second point and your question. I've been very much interested in the fact that American art after the Second World War is very well known in Europe, and you'll find American paintings, American art in general, in European collections, pop art, abstract expressionists.
And I take it that Hartley is important in this placement.
In Europe, American art after the Second World War is known, but nobody knows the art before the Second World War. American art in the early 20th century and in the 19th century is rather unknown. There have been very few exhibitions.
Now, wait, let's pause on this. What was the reason? Snobbishness? A failure to communicate? What was going on?
Yes. Snobbishness is perhaps a little bit of it. I would think that American art has been considered in a certain way, in a very superficial way, as a kind of a provincial derivation of American art.
This clearly has some literary parallels. Do I have this right, Tony Ludington?
Oh, I think it's exactly the same sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, to elaborate on Thomas's point, the American artists themselves who did go over contributed to this idea. I mean, one has only to look at the American Impressionists, most of the important ones of which spent a good deal of time in France. They aped, is not a very attractive word, but they aped the French Impressionists. And in their own minds, I think they felt that they were rather kind of underdogs. Well, we have the same kinds of examples in American literature. Henry James certainly felt something of this. The reason we have old Mark Twain working against him, and then the two not liking each other at all, because Henry James realized that Mark Twain was celebrating America, and Mark Twain had a chip on his shoulder about celebrating America. He did it very well, but there's a world of difference, and he was the first one. All American literature begins with the first half of Huckleberry Finn, as Ernest Hemingway said.
Well, let's stay on the literary theme for a moment. You have before you here, Tony Ludington, a couple of poems that Marston Hartley wrote. Our topic is Marston Hartley, the American painter, a man who died in 1943. To the extent that it's possible to look at the poetry and get a sense of the themes and the ideas, the importance of the painting, fire away here. Give me a couple of lines and tell me what's important or peculiar or special.
Let me say, before I do, I'll read one poem. My point being that the poem, which is not a bad poem, I think, it's not great, but that the poem reflects Hartley's attempt to say poetically something that he did late in his life with paintings, rider-esque paintings of dead animals, in this case of a dead sea dove. Another reason I became interested in Hartley, because my interest had been literary primarily, of course, was that Hartley is a prolific and pretty good poet. He is also a very good essayist. And I had thought that I would not try to change him from artist into writer, but I thought that this would be, I'd be able to make links. I think that less now. I think he's very much important as an artist. Okay. And these other things are amusing. The literary aspect of his life I use by way of showing his ideas. Let me read one poem.
Sure.
It's a late poem, and it's called This Portrait of a Sea Dove Dead.
Is it important, just very quickly and parenthetically, that he's writing or painting looking at dead things? Am I trivializing here?
No. Albert Pinkham Ryder did this and did some lovely, delicate things, and many other artists have, too.
So this was not necessarily some morbid...
No. He was trying in these things to capture something of the grace and the beauty and the fragility of natural beings, which are, which are the prey of the forces of nature, which is exactly how Hartley felt himself, because he moved away from kind of the, I would say, rather vapid God's in his heaven and all's right with the world attitude, which he had early, because the world had been a harsh place for Hartley.
All right.
And so, you know, he's expressing something very personal when he writes about a sea dove. And the poem goes thus. Sea dove in a shroud of sand, all shiny with thick clips of sun, Sea dove in a shroud of sand and the last words spoken, alone. I did not carry messages for love or war to end their ways. I only bore flicked wave caresses and took them to a timely place. I gave them to my brood to drink, a draught of silence on the brink of death I gave, telling them also to be brave, have grace, to face the loneness of their days. I closed my eyes on a kiss of sun, and this I give to everyone.
Thomas Gitkins?
Tony, would you say that the poem is complementary to the painting?
As I feel the painting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, both, that's as I see and feel the painting, and I am very moved always by a number of these very simple, direct paintings. His story reflects the problem with four modernist painters in this country. People did not like and did not understand the kinds of thing he was doing, or the other modernist, Dove, a man named Alfred Maurer, who committed suicide because of his despondency, both over the death of his father and the fact that nobody appreciated his paintings.
Is this typical of just what we might call the life of the artist in this country? That, now, there's a large and a sort of hopeless kind of generality, but it's depressing to hear this kind of story, that that we treat our artists this way. Thomas Gitkins?
I don't think it's only special for this country. It's special for every country.
Yeah.
Artists are very often not recognized by society.
They got to be dead 100 years.
Yes.
Or at least dead.
Right. Well, Thomas is exactly right, and of course he knows a great deal more about it than I do, but one has only to go to New York and go down around Greenwich Village and hook up with somebody who knows the art field and walk around to see, not people who are necessarily starving, but for example, I can remember going up, spending a few days with my niece, Tiffany Bell, who is herself really doing very well as an art critic, and she's very interested in the contemporary art scene, and her friends, who are, some are artists that I think seem to be quite good, they're stenographers, and then they go home and they do something at night, you know, with their work, and they hope that they can get a break and that somebody will come see them, that a dealer will come and pick them up, and then maybe they get the break.
Mm-hmm. Thomas Gitkins.
Yeah. Well, you know, nobody would say that Andy Warhol is a poor painter.
Yeah.
And we have modern painters, as we had in the 19th century, we have salon painters, pompiers in France, who were rather rich and who sold in a good way their paintings. But the problem always was who will be accepted by a given society. And this is a very complicated question which we couldn't resolve here. But in the case of Marston Hartley, he found friends realizing that he was a very important painter. But his real success has come with history, and after his death only.
Townsend Ludington and Thomas Gitkins. Our topic is Marston Hartley, the American painter, man who died in 1943. Let's be fanciful for a moment. Townie, if Hartley were sitting here across the table from you, would you ask him a question? What would it be?
I don't know. I guess my first inclination, as it has been increasingly as I've gotten to know him, would be to reach out and pat him on the arm. And then I would, because apparently he was a very good talker. Stieglitz, right after his death, wrote a friend named Arnold Ronnebeck, a German sculptor, as a matter of fact, who was then living in Colorado, and said, Hartley was a wonderful talker, and it was great fun just to be around him. And I think I'd try to get him to start talking about some of his painting, because I'm interested in his ideas and why he painted the things he did. Well, this is a kind of banal response, but I think he would talk very well about it.
Thomas Gitkins, what
Same
would you
thing.
Say?
I would ask very specific questions.
About the art.
Yes. You know, an art historian and then a literary historian, we are also in a certain way detectives.
Uh-huh.
We try to figure out what was he thinking, what was he doing at this moment, what was he thinking about certain other artists. you know, this kind of, we try to get into his thinking and into his way of work. And so Tony, as I do, we in our conversations also, we speak about that. Well, yeah. Was he interested in that? So I would ask it.
Let's conclude our conversation. Our topic has been Marsden Hartley, the American painter, Townsend Ludington from the University of North Carolina, and Thomas Gitkins from the Free University of Berlin. What is his legacy? What is his importance today for not only specialists such as yourselves, an art historian, a biographer? Should people know about him? Why? Tony, can I begin with you?
People interested in American art should know about people interested in art. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say should, because that's their business. I think would like to know about him, because certainly the understanding of his art is now, we can understand his things as people at the time perhaps could not. The legacy is the legacy of any American artist. It's expressions that are American. Landscape, transcendentalism, a search for belonging, Puritan values. Oh, you can make cases for all of these kinds of things, which become fascinating in terms of trying to understand American culture. Mm-hmm. And again, that's one of the reasons that I took to him, because I thought, gosh, this guy can tell us something about ourselves. As we come to understand him, we come to understand ourselves, is I guess my point.
Thomas Gitkins?
Well, I would answer this first in a very banal way. I think he was really very, very good artist, and I just like his work, and I think it's of a very high quality. My second point is that I think he's a very interesting character and a very interesting example of European-American cultural exchange. And as I see it, an understanding of another culture could only really happen if both cultures are interested in the works the other culture is doing. And so both cultures should have their specialist working on the other culture. And it's not good, and there couldn't come a real understanding if we are only interested, for example, in Europe, in recent American art. We should really consider the tradition, the continuity of American culture. And so I see also my interest in Marsden Hartley as an example, and as an attempt to overcome this narrow-minded view of American culture.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You've been listening to a conversation about the life and art of the American painter Marsden Hartley, who lived from 1877 till 1943, one of the first American modernist painters. My guests were Townsend Ludington of the University of North Carolina and Thomas Gitkins of the Free University of Berlin. For a cassette copy of Soundings on Marsden Hartley, send $3 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Next week, Soundings on Art and Society continues. My guest will be Murray Rosten of Bar-Ilan University in Israel. The topic will be Renaissance Perspectives in Literature and the Visual Arts. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Support for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Listen to Soundings. This is Kim Nielsen at the National Humanities Center, inviting you to join Wayne Pond this week for a discussion about the life and work of the American painter Marsden Hartley. Hartley was among the first American modernist painters, an artist in search of native subjects, form, and atmosphere. Some answers and insights about Hartley's life and art from his biographer and an art historian, this week on Soundings, from the National Humanities Center on this station.